Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Is this the pod you've always wanted to hear? We are two guys that sometimes drink beer, and we say things that your mom told you to fear. It's the bad, 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 bad Christian. All right, we up in this piece, Matt.
In the piece.
We just live in the dream, and one of the dreams that I've always had was to own my own company, and I've achieved it.
Kind of.
I think that even you would agree that I'm the CEO.
Something like that.
So I yeah. mean, yeah, that's what I. That's all I ever wanted, something like a CEO, an owner, right?
You're an owner now, of a business, and technically. Yep. It's just not run like a business.
Now, when you
yet.
When you kick ass at business like me, one thing you realize is, you know what's one of the most important things?
I do. Hiring.
Yes. The people are what matter. And that's never been more evident than with ZipRecruiter. Hiring is a challenge, especially with everything else you have to consider today. You know everything else you got to consider today. My God. But there's one place where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter for free. Free, I said, at ZipRecruiter.com/MadChristian. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BADCHRISTIAN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And I will say this. It is hard to spell the word Christian for me.
It is.
Christian. So I have to say that when I spell it. I go Christian or something like that. So yes. I know, because I get all mixed up with the I's and the A's.
Double vowels.
It's just too much. When we named this podcast, when we named this podcast, I didn't realize how hard it would be to spell the podcast for me.
Wasn't thinking of the promo code.
No. I wish to God we would have named this podcast Bad.
Yeah. Would have been better. Long term. So Toby, I haven't really prepared enough for the show today. Sometimes I'm just flying by the seat of my pants, but I'm checking my notes here. We have on the show today Ravi Zacharias.
No, he died, Matt.
Oh, sorry.
He's no longer with us.
I'm not up to date. What's today then?
You know, I was getting ready to say rest in peace, but if somebody ends up being horrible, you don't want them to rest in peace, right?
I'm not going to weigh in on that. I have no wishes. Beyond this realm.
Yeah, that's true. Well, whatever's beyond this realm, let it handle itself.
Yeah, right.
So, but he's no longer with us. And so I've been following him so for a while, because I first got into Ravi Zacharias, and we're going to have Daniel that wrote an article about Ravi's indiscretions, I guess, his sexual impropriety. What do you call it? I mean, having sex with women he shouldn't be having sex with, and
misconduct,
rape,
misconduct.
I think some of the allegations are rape and all kinds of stuff that's been uncovered with he owns several masseuse. What do you call it? It's not a massage parlor, isn't that wrong? You don't call them massage parlors anymore. They call them parlors.
Okay. I don't know.
Well, he owns several massage parlors and use money from Ravi Zacharias Ministries to give them money and then force them to have sex with him and send them pictures. And all. He's done a lot of bad stuff. But anyway,
so we have the journalist who covered that on today.
Yes.
That makes more sense. Okay.
Right. Yes. He's coming on. Daniel Silliman. It might be Silliman. Silliman, I think is his name. Daniel Silliman. And he agreed to come on and talk about it. He wrote the article for Christianity Today, and I think this will be really interesting. So I'm looking forward to it. and we'll talk about it more. But I followed Ravi for a while because it was kind of like that, you know, it was that thing, kind of like Ben Shapiro, where it'll be like Ravi Zacharias destroys atheist or something, you know. And then he just says something, you know. And I mean, he was well spoken, and it seemed legit. But there's a lot going on in that guy's, and it once again makes me think, why would you trust any person, much less a person that tells you God is speaking through them?
That's
why would you trust that person? That almost seems like, I mean, that if God is speaking through you, maybe once in your life, but all the time, like these mega pastors and stuff. I mean, all the time that God needs them or is using them specifically to carry the word throughout the world with their jets and with their money and their man, all this stuff. I mean, their organizations that they're funding, their tax-free write-offs that they're doing. I mean, why are these people, and I would say almost exclusively men, getting away with so much? They're getting a pass with so much. I mean, Ravi Zacharias had some things come up over the last few years, even while he was still alive, that seemed pretty shady.
Yeah,
and now,
did you have a profile on him? Did you have suspicions or thoughts about him from 10 years ago to 2 years ago to recently?
I didn't at first, and then some things started coming up. Let's just save it for when Daniel comes on, because I want to ask him about it too, because Christianity Today wrote several articles. This article that he wrote, he co-authored it with Kate Shelnut, and she, back in 2017, wrote an article about Ravi Zacharias responding to sexting allegations in 2017. He died in 2019. And so, I mean, this is – and his organization defended him. But, I mean, there's a bunch there. He called himself Dr. Zacharias, but it was an honorary.
Yeah. That was the first thing I heard that started to be funny, was when it was like, yeah, that – credentialing stuff and whatever. But the point you're hitting on there about why would you trust anybody who, I mean, you could start with why would you trust anybody? Why would you trust a public figure? You should be the most skeptical of anybody who's doing things that are good. That whoever's doing the most good is who you should be most skeptical of, is what I'm saying.
I think you might be right.
When I say doing the most good, I'm saying claim. But they don't claim it. But you know the projections of organizations where the thing is like the real serious thing that's like really needed. And I'm not just talking about Christianity. I'm talking about philanthropy and all this stuff. When it's vague, especially when it's vague and it's just awesome and they just really care. Fuck no.
Right.
No. I'm more skeptical of you than any used car salesman. And then if you prove me wrong, fine. That's fine. But I at least trust a used car salesman more than whoever is doing good in the world.
I think the big thing, too, that really stuck out with this, and it just made me think, man, now at least we have the internet and people are more connected and it's easier to see through some of these, you know, charlatans and grifters and bad people. I was just thinking, think about over the centuries, how many people used the name of Jesus and really did bad. I mean, of course, I've always known that, but like it never hit more home harder. I was just thinking, man, this Ravi Zacharias guy seemed so legit. Seemed like a nice older guy that just wanted to really, you know, be an apologist for the Lord. And then you just go, oh, he's just shitty. He's shitty.
Ben Shapiro thing is right. He always has made all of his nut on, pardon the pun, on the destroying of people, like the hero of shutting the evil person down. So that's a easy. If you could have that skill, you can get. You could do anything because you'd have unlimited support, and he did,
right?
Because he had a very special skill in a war that he was involved in,
right?
So in the war of culture war of Christianity, he was a great skilled soldier who could really annihilate an enemy evil person really well. Yeah. And he did that in many ways, but that was the thing that everybody loved him as a hero for. And if you had a soldier in your war that could do that, like Brad Pitt at the beginning of Troy or whatever, you know, that's who he was. And so I'm sure he's a ladies' man.
Right.
or whatever. He gets drunk all the time. I mean, whoever's the biggest hero that has some special skill can also get away with the most every time. Right. Michael Jackson could get away with a lot for his special skill, for instance.
Right.
That's how that works. It will, whoever has the most skill and then is doing good, especially the more vague it is where all the bad stuff will always be.
That sounds like through evolution that way, though, too, though. Like, so you, the big, strong guy maybe gets more because he was able to fight off the bad enemy or something.
Good trade.
He's not perfect.
So what?
It sucks. Yeah. And so that just kind of becomes ingrained in you. But now, as life is changing, it's just that's just not the case.
Well, the Christianity part is worse than a soldier from war who doesn't deny his roughness, though.
Right.
Is what I'm this one these type when it's like in the name of something else other than the direct thing, for Jesus in this case or whatever that is more it's more insidious because it's more pretend involved.
Yeah.
There's a pretending that's necessary. For his own self, probably. I'm sure he had to really do some gymnastics in his own head, too. Like, it wasn't, you know. Right. But the fact that there's so much of that in Christianity, this might be counterintuitive sounding, but I believe is more evidence of the reality of Jesus and God being real. The fact that there are more grifters in Christianity.
Yeah, because it's so true
yes,
and so
it's
good
the best place
that
you, could
that
ever
you latch
hide
onto it, right?
Because that is real. Jesus is the best. Therefore, he is the best person to hide under.
Yeah.
The best ever of all time. Yeah. He's in power. You know
That's
what I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah.
So even more evidence of Jesus' goodness is how shitty Ravi is, in my view.
Yeah.
From the get-go. And, you know, and all, it's always our willingness to want that king that the Bible always tells us not to want. That's,
yeah, you're right.
That's our central sin as humans, Christians, whatever it is. That's it. It just says it. You don't want a king? Yes, we do. Fuck you. I want a king. I'll take that one. Will he kill my enemy? Will he destroy him in a YouTube video? Okay.
Right.
We're good. We're good to go.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people that you work with, that you want them to be good and trustworthy.
Yeah.
You want trustworthy people, right?
Well, that's just a prime example of why finding great candidates to hire can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack, really. So, sure, you could post your job to some job board, but who knows who's going to respond then. But then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, and which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. So when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites with one click. Then ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other services may overwhelm you with applications to sift through, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for, the needle in the haystack. In fact, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. That's ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/badchristian. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Very good.
Well, I do think that the world we live in right now, there's some really good... That's what I think is kind of cool about the time that we live in. Everyone's trying to figure out how to move forward with stuff because we have access to information like never before. And so you can find out more about your local pastor or the global pastors or, you know, the mega church pastors or whatever. You can find out more information about them and be more aware. But at the same time, it's infringing on freedom and what you can do and what all that is. So it's an interesting time where you used to could just be yourself and now your words matter more and your actions matter more because somebody can get hold of that information about you more and more and more. And we just hadn't been able to figure out how to use it yet. Like we've used it immediately. Like it's been kind of good to try and stop really bad folks. But we're still now trying to figure out who is actually bad and what does it mean to be bad or dangerous or hurtful or racist or misogynist or, you know, a rapist or what, you know, we're trying to figure out all these things now. Like the big one, I don't know if you even saw it, the Ari Hammer guy.
Army Hammer, yeah.
Army Hammer guy that's a cannibal or something like that.
just, I mean, you know, used to could get away with a little cannibalism.
You could,
you know,
get away with I mean, you were just kind of a cannibal. Is he full blown cannibal? Does he identify as a cannibal? I don't know. I don't want to put
I mean, you used to could just get away with some stuff. I don't know why we're going to be so picky these days. Can't eat shit. Can't eat anybody.
My God. Anyway, but you know what's funny too is that his name is Arm and Hammer, like the baking soda, right?
Yeah, it's a weird name.
I was reading about it. Do you know that I think it's his grandfather or great grand, one of them was actually named Arm and Hammer, and when that Arm and Hammer baking soda came out, he thought, all his friends were like, "Oh, that's hilarious! You're named after a baking soda," and so he didn't create it or anything, but he actually bought a shitload of stock in Arm and Hammer. And
that's an interesting
made money
story.
On it. Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird? But it just, the name was a coincidence. Armin Hammer, and they're Arm and Hammer or whatever. But anyway, so his granddad was that, and he, I guess, has some legacy money from that. But he texted people or whatever about how he wanted to eat their blood or drink their blood and eat them and all this stuff. And so now, because of that, his career is definitely in jeopardy. It may be over. And that was a thing that he was texting to people, and now he might not ever work again. And I don't know.
I think he might have, you know, carved his name in blood on people's vaginas also, though.
He did that?
I think so.
I didn't know that. He carved his name on their vaginas in blood?
I think he carved.
Well, that's a little different than a text. My God. Are you sure that's the...
Something like that. I mean, it's not just text. It's not a text issue.
I'm gonna do some research. I'm typing in Army. I'm gonna type in Army Hammer. How would you word that?
Carve. C-A-R-V.
Carve.
Vagina. V-A-G. Just type vag. And see if it, you
badge.
Know.
Carve. Badge. His name in blood. See what comes up.
I mean, that's not. I mean, other people
have
done that.
Very first thing. Allegedly. This is awful. This is not funny. I'm just shocked by the title. I'm not laughing. Another woman.
I told you not to laugh.
No, I'm not laughing. Another woman. So there was another one. Now there's another one. Who claims to be the actor's former girlfriend opens up about an alleged knife play that left her with a permanent scar during their real-life 50 Shades of Grey without the love. Oh, was he the guy from 50 Shades of Grey? That's
no,
who this is?
No, it's just that the topic is similar.
He's not the actor from 50 Shades of Grey?
I don't think so.
Maybe not.
I think it's just the same subject matter.
Well, it says, and this is from Ace Showbiz, his problems continue to mount as another ex-girlfriend comes forward and with claims he carved a letter A into her body. Paige Lorenz alluded to the relationship with the movie star in the YouTube video earlier this week, and now she's a 22-year-old model, has shared her story with Daily Mail TV, revealing that she spent time with Hammer and that he cut her and was, I guess, somewhat abusive here. I'm trying to scroll through here. But Lorenz claims that she was often left bruised after time spent with Hammer, adding, "There were teeth marks and bite marks all over me. He was completely obsessed with biting me. He told me to be proud as they were just love bites."
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
He saw it differently than she did.
Yeah, that... Different point of view, I guess. I don't know.
All right.
So, okay, it looks like we are at that point of the show. Our Daniel Silliman is in the waiting room if you're ready for him, Toby.
Well, I am, but first, I wouldn't mind doing a little bit of music here because...
Okay, I'll roll some music to get you ready.
Kick that music
for
me.
How about some Demon Hunter?
I'd love some Demon Hunter, my friend. All right, you're listening to I Will Fail You, one of the songs from Demon Hunter's upcoming project, Songs of Death and Resurrection. Songs of Death and Resurrection is a collection of beloved Demon Hunter songs that have been reimagined into acoustic arrangements featuring the full band, string sections, and lots more. To pre-order the record, head to demonhunter.live to find exclusive shirts, box set vinyl, and more, or head to the Solid State store for more vinyl variants as well. I Will Fail You is one of the several singles currently available, and many more are on the way. So go follow the band's Spotify and Apple Music pages so you don't miss anything. Songs of Death and Resurrection is available everywhere on March 5th. Pre-order now. All right, let's bring on Daniel.
Okay, I'm going to admit him and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hey, Daniel, can you hear us? How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
We're doing good. We were already rolling and recording. If you just want to jump in here, we were already discussing Ravi and a bunch of other stuff. So this will be the point. If you share the show, you tell them to skip all that part and you go just straight to this.
Yeah, just to this. We were just saying that Ravi is the Army Hammer of Christianity.
Army Hammer? What does that mean?
You had to look it up.
Yeah, you got to look it up. You just got to look it up, Daniel. You're a journalist, Daniel. Come on.
It's another celebrity with a scandal, but you know, he's not in the Christian space. So
yeah, a sex scandal.
Oh, you said Arnie Hammer. I heard Army Hammer, like a hammer that you use in the army. I'm like, is that a Swiss Army Hammer? Like, what are we talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sorry to throw you off. Go ahead.
No worries.
We're glad to have you, though, today, especially just because this story is kind of fresh and your article just came out, right?
Yeah, last week.
It just came out last week. So we've been kind of paying attention to it for a period of time and, you know, following it, but now having read your article, it feels finally like makes sense to get the full picture and understand. I thought your article was terrific. And before we talk about that, though, I would like to ask a question about just Christianity today and getting caught up to that, what its history is, and how you got to be there, because it seems like to me in the last 5 years, it's really become a different situation journalistically with Christianity. Like 5 or 6 years ago, there wasn't so much net need for this hard journalism and watchdog stuff. And now, even Christianity Today, which I would have thought was a more conservative place, this and that, is like really has a serious job to do these days of watchdogging and reporting and this kind of stuff. And that doesn't seem like it's going to stop. So I'm curious how you've seen that landscape, maybe I'm just out of touch, but how you've seen that landscape to develop to where we are today and how you got involved to this level to be reporting to this detail.
Yeah, sure. Christianity Today has definitely had hard news reporting actually from the beginning. Like if you look at the, you know, so it starts in 1956, and it's Billy Graham's idea that they should be a magazine, and the magazine, his idea is to kind of distinguish between the like fundamentalists who are angry all the time and the people around him who are more interested in evangelism and are willing to work with like Anglicans in the UK and stuff and are not quite as angry about those types of things. But if you look at those first magazines, like they have news reports, like here's what's going on in India, or, you know, here's what's happening with Christians in Alabama or stuff like that. But the magazine does get more involved in kind of investigative stuff at some point. I want to say the 90s, there was actually a couple of things with like relatives of Billy Graham. And that was kind of the line where Christianity Today was like, okay, if we're going to report on bad stuff happening or happening because of or by people related to Billy Graham, then like that's clear that that's what our commitment is. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're definitely more interested in reporting on people in our tribe, so to speak. Not totally happy with the language of tribe, but we're definitely more about holding people to account who we think are like on our side or generally part of the larger project of evangelical Christianity. I just started in 2019, so I'm relatively new. I've been working on the Ravi Zacharias stuff since last August. Mm-hmm. So for a while now, but that's definitely the biggest thing I've done since I started Christianity Today.
It just seems like that thing where you have to, once you go into giving an account, holding people accountable and doing investigative stuff, then it becomes, I guess, incumbent upon you to do it and do it well. And you can't leave stuff out at that point. You're obligated. So now it seems like tell me if I'm wrong about that, but there's an acceleration of things to investigate over this, and you know, with the information being available on Twitter and the culture moving to where people come forward about more things more often, you can't, you know, there's more to investigate, it seems, these days.
I do think that people are more willing to come forward. People at least have the idea that it can work out well for like whistleblowers and or victims. You know, people, I mean, I think this is the Me Too movement. This is, you know, the stuff that came out with the Catholic Church, with the Boston, and starting with the Boston investigation and the spotlight team at the Boston Globe. You know, people learn how to report, and people who've been living actually in secret sort of see an option to sort of tell their story. So I don't know that it's, I don't know that it's 100% a change with us. I don't know that it's 100% change with Christianity. I feel like we're just a part of this like larger thing.
It does feel like Christianity in general, though, is in a big shift. And this is, it does feel to me like Matt was saying earlier, like Christianity today would seem like a site or a publication that was just real pro everything church. And now with articles like this, I feel like there's some credibility added now. Not that there wasn't credibility before, but even more to call out our own, like you said. I know you used the word tribe. I kind of agree. Maybe it's not the best word, but our group has done a pretty poor job in general of calling out ourselves. You know, like I think overall Christianity has had a real failure with, let's give them a second chance. Let's, you know, it's such a good person. You know, man, he, you know, that pastor has meant so much to somebody, to our, the movement and all the stuff. And there has been a lot less clear reporting and clear data. And so it is pretty eye opening now, to see this and for you guys to be taking these stands. I mean, do you guys, when you do something about like Ravi Zacharias, he passed away, what, in 2019? Is that right?
Or May 2020. The most recent scandal came out in September when I reported them in September. That was the
September 2020. So
yeah, a couple months after he died. Basically.
Have you received pushback because he died and let's just he's gone, let's just move past, or are people been receptive to this critical report that you've given?
Yeah. Well, to back up for a second, I just want to push back a little bit. You said like, maybe we used to be, Christianity Today used to be really pro-church, and now we're more willing to report on scandal. And it's very clear to me that we're doing this because we're pro-church. Mm-hmm. Like that reporting on scandal.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Just to be very clear.
No.
I'm 100% sure there were people in the past who were like, let's not report on this. It'll hurt the church. You know, but my editorial team, the people above me and the people that I report to are very clear that not reporting on something like this would hurt the church.
But that shift in mentality,
that's a change, absolutely. But the change is not that somehow we've stopped caring about the church.
No, I think that's right. Very pro-Christianity, pro-church.
I want to argue the opposite.
Yes, you're right. I believe Christianity Today, obviously, even in the title, is very pro-church, pro-Christianity. But I'm saying taking some of these stands and writing about that's what I'm saying.
The criticism you pointed out, absolutely. I definitely have heard, you know, a million and one times that he died, and so why even talk about it? You know, and you even saw in the last report in the investigation that that the RZIM commissions, you heard Zacharias himself say, "Don't tell on me because a million souls will be damned," or something
right.
like that. So yeah, you do hear that. I got a ton of pushback after I wrote his obituary. So I wrote his obituary for CT in May of 2020. And we kind of knew that there was some stuff, certainly the stuff from 2017, but we knew there was some other stuff that like seemed scandalous, but we didn't have any evidence and couldn't, you know, report. You know, for a reporter, the worst space to live is that space where like, you know, but you can't say it, you can't prove it, you don't know.
Right.
So we wrote an obit that was very circumspect. It was like five paragraphs long. It was very short. It was just like, here's who he was. He died. Here's what he died of. And I used, you know, a paragraph and a half of my five paragraphs to say these scandals have happened. We know that there's that this stuff has happened. Both mentioning both the sexting scandal from the sexting accusations from 2017 and the credentials scandal, which was kind of rolling for a while. And that's when I got the most pushback, actually. That's when I got letter after letter after letter.
Really?
People really upset and really angry that they just saw it as a moment to honor this person and to celebrate him. And the fact that that we were going to say, well, okay, but you can't not acknowledge this stuff. Like, not acknowledging it is a line that we're not willing to cross.
And it's not, it doesn't have to be a moral line. I mean, it really does not have to do anything with morality to know that you have to take care of your own self, because it leaves you in further worst case to ignore things and then look bad later that you knew or could have said. It's basically that we have a duty to tell the truth. And that's the best way to cover your ass, is tell the truth and not sit on things. Sitting on things can be obviously damaging. So there's a duty inherent, even if you're just trying to protect yourself. And it's part of, and it's also part of the immune system of any system of, so say for the church, I consider what Toby and I do to be some function of the immune system of the church, and what you do to be as well, from a different point of view and with a different reason. But everybody knows it's necessary for everybody to say the truth that they can. It's just very inconvenient for a lot of people a lot of times. So it takes special people or boldness or a publication or a, you know, it takes other things to really push it through, because nobody wants to hear it. They just don't want to hear. It's like, way, if you could just vote, does anybody want to hear bad stuff or not about your hero? Everybody's, I mean, the majority, it doesn't get to determine, shouldn't get to determine
hard.
That outcome.
Yeah.
What does it feel like, Daniel, for like you starting to collect information and the world doesn't know it yet, but you do? Like you said, you had to hold on, because you can't report until it's actually real. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, that would be, that could be dangerous or hurtful, or you could be wrong. Like, you have to do real reporting, and you're holding this stuff in and knowing, oh, wait a minute, there's some real bad stuff here. And then you are building a case to write your article, basically, right? What does that feel like?
Yeah, and especially with that first one in September, there was a really long stretch of time where I thought I might never get the evidence that I need to actually write this article. Like, I don't know. You know, there's a kind of critical mass you need. You can't just have one person tell you a bunch of stuff and then
right.
go to press. You know, you right. really have to be careful. So yeah, that was a pretty long haul. That took kind of weeks and weeks. That's not true for a normal article. Like, a normal article, you have a pretty good idea. Like, I'm going to call, I'm going to talk to a couple people, going to do some research, and then I'll write it up and it'll be ready to go. But yeah, this required a lot of careful work. I mean, talking to victims, first of all, the victims were not immediately ready to go on the record. There was a lot of negotiation of, you know, would they consider being named? Did they trust an organization that had Christianity in the name, you know, to do right by their story? Did they believe that I was going to tell their story truthfully and accurately? So yeah, that's a long process to work through.
I can't imagine
that.
Building that trust with the victims. Like, you had to do that so that, because they'd already been hurt, and now they think, "What is it going to be used against me? Am I?" Because I'm sure his was RZIM the had probably contacted them and talked to them, and were the victims kind of scared to talk at first, like, because they didn't have the information.
RZIM hadn't had any contact with the people. RZIM didn't know who they were.
Didn't know,
but they were all aware that RZIM had sued a previous person who had made accusations. And so, you know, if you're a normal human being and there's a ministry with millions of dollars and a famous Christian with lots of very rich friends who has a penchant to sue, like, you're cautious and reasonably cautious.
Right.
So. Oh, absolutely. The church is, in my experience, I've dealt with more than one church, more than one mega church, for more, you know, with boards and negotiations and things like that that are very zero sum and negative. And you start to get the feeling of how powerful those things are and how unlikely they are to change. And some of the details about that I find to be really the most important about your article and most disturbing to me, because the sexting, I mean, I can get my mind around that pretty easy. You know, and he's got way worse stuff than sexting. I want to talk about it too. But in general, large figure who's very powerful and has sexual misconduct, that's, to whatever degree that is, that's very, at least, common or easy to understand, at least. But the ways that the organizations that are supposed to hold those people, the whole idea that these boards are for accountability and to help and to prevent that, when they become complicit with cover-ups and ignoring information, some of that becomes the most disturbing stuff, the details of that. And the particular thing in here, in this article that you said, that I'm going to say a few things from it, but this is the thing that turns my stomach the most, that it says in there, Zacharias warned the woman, and this sounds like it's out of the Bible. Zacharias warned the woman, a fellow believer, if she ever spoke out against him, she would be responsible for millions of souls lost when his reputation was damaged. Isn't that evil? That's crazy. You know, that, and that was, I don't remember all of the context of that, but just hearing that line just stuck out to me. I copied and pasted it because I was like, damn.
Yeah. There were a couple of lines like that, and it's also stuff like that that starts having the, you know, the ring of truth. You were asking, like, when do you know you kind of have the story? The woman in 2017 had quoted Zacharias as saying, I deserve this. Like, he had this sort of justification that he told her, according to her. The first woman that I talked to who worked at one of the spas in Atlanta quoted that line verbatim from her own experience with Ravi Zacharias. Mm. She said, she said, this feels wrong. This seems wrong. This seems terrible. You're married. You also own this business. Like, there's a bunch of layers where the power seems abusive. She didn't quite say it like that, but that was definitely the idea. And he gave this justification. Oh, well, I deserve this. I've given so much to ministry. This should come to me. And then in the report that the independent investigation that came out last week that we reported on, there's another woman that the lawyers there found who has exactly the same line. So you have, like, over the course of a decade or more, multiple victims who don't know each other, all telling very similar stories, giving very similar details, but then even using, like, that line, you know, that self-justification by the sentence.
Yeah. Well, he's so good with words and logic and persuasion. Like, that's part of his gig, is he's ultra persuasive. That is his ultra skill. And he knows how to use credential. I mean, all of those things. I mean, it's a very powerful situation, not to mention just having money or being able to settle or get NDAs written and stuff like that. It's just astonishing.
And the victims that I talked to for that first story in September were very clear that, like, he cared about them, you know, and that was the first moment when they, like, let their guard down. Like, he was able to be vulnerable and authentic and in the conversation and, like, connect with them as people. And I think that's part of what makes it so devastating, right? Is that that is a real human connection,
right,
that then gets abused, that then gets, you in retrospect realize, oh, that person didn't care about me. It was all manipulative. But they did have a human connection that they were willing to manipulate in that case.
Well, let's go back there a little bit, because you're I guess, was that your first article back in September 29, 2020? For folks listening, the title of the article is Ravi Zacharias' Ministry Investigates Claims of Sexual Misconduct at Spas. And so he had passed away in May, right? But how did you find out, like, what's the journal, what was your process of, you heard some allegations, or what did you hear and then start investigating about it? When and how?
So I got contacted by Steve Boffman in August. And Boffman, for those who don't know, is he sometimes goes online as the banjo atheist. And he's a part-time attorney, part-time student, part-time music teacher out in California. And he had been, I think he originally started looking up Ravi to like try and debate him and argue with him over apologetic stuff.
Yeah.
And then stumbled into or discovered some of the credentials problems.
Right.
And since then had been writing and had a blog called Ravi Watch and had been kind of documenting stuff that just wasn't as it seemed. So I, he contacted me in August, and basically said, I have some information, I can put it out there, but everybody just thinks I'm a crazy atheist who is obsessed with Ravi.
Right.
A friend has convinced me to tell you first, and if you can report the story, maybe it will have, maybe people will listen to it. Maybe it'll have a bigger effect. Maybe like it'll have some credibility. And he said, pretty frankly, he's like, I don't trust you. I don't expect you to do this. I don't think they'll ever let you report this story. You know, he had talked a lot about the sort of Christian mafia protecting its own. And he basically was just convinced to kind of give it a chance to sort of trust me. And so he told me what he knew. And then gave me one contact, at the spas in Atlanta and said, you know, go see if you can do it. And so then I built the story from there and Steve ended up actually, releasing a YouTube video a couple weeks later. I wasn't fast enough for him. But I, started calling everybody I could. I started the first thing I thought I was just going to try and report that he owned spas, because even that wasn't a surprise to me. I don't know other major Christian ministers who own spas.
Right.
You know, all of my reporting told me that these were legitimate businesses. They weren't. You know, they weren't really for prostitution, but pretending to be spas, they really were spas.
Yeah.
And yet it's still an odd choice.
I mean,
yeah. So I first was like finding the financial information about that. And then I was able to track down ultimately six women who worked there. And three of them told me that they'd been abused and were willing to tell me their stories. And this was, this took weeks and weeks and phone calls and phone calls. And there were people that I like called at their place of work six times. And you can't really leave that as a message. Hey, I suspect that you were abused by a famous Christian 10 years ago. Can you call me back? So you have to kind of say, hey, I'm looking to talk to you about this thing. And, you know. So I found three women, slowly convinced them to tell me their story, first off the record, agreeing not to publish anything. And then as we built up trust, sort of moved forward, and then was able to document as much as possible for my own sake and a little bit for the story about them too, like that they worked where they said they worked, that they had the history they said they did, and that kind of thing. And my experience there is that, you know, I've had people lie to me before. Stuff falls apart pretty fast. You can tell pretty quickly. And for every true thing that you find out about someone, it's more likely that the next thing they tell you will also be true.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to some of the allegations. So there's those which were along the lines of he would develop relationships with massage. What was the pattern there with the massage people?
Yeah, so he would, according to these women, would go to the spas, and he owned the first thing is that he owned them. He bought with a partner a spa that's a couple of minutes from his office in Atlanta, their big like HQ headquarters there. So they also worked for him, though he wasn't involved in like the day-to-day management. But yeah, he would go, he would get a massage. He quite famously had a back injury, so which he treated with massage. So that was sort of very well known. And then the story that they all told me is that he would start relating to them very personally, build up a relationship with them, sort of see them regularly, and then start pushing lines. First taking the cloth off of him, so exposing himself, being erect in front of them. Sorry for people who didn't expect that word, but we've been talking about it for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, we usually use boner, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this case, I want to be a little more technical.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then touch, and then there was groping. And they all told me that, like, it would start out seeming like an accident, and then they would kind of back away, and then it would get more invasive and more.
And these women knew he was their boss and their owner and all of that, right?
That he was a famous Christian.
Famous, yeah, he had power and all of that stuff. Yeah.
The second spa, yeah, I mean, the headquarters are down the street. The name is on the building. It's his name. It's not super secret. And the second spa actually sold his books in the store, in the spa. And the women talked about, like, knowing that he was going to come in regularly, so they would, like, read his Christian books to have something to talk about with him when he came in, because he was this powerful person.
Right.
And then with the one person, he sort of escalated to the point of he would masturbate in front of her basically every time, so more than 50 times over the course of a couple of years.
Wow.
So that's pretty
and then
all, but that happened between like 2004 and 2004, I think, and 2012. It's about, there's two spas, they're in exactly the same location, so the one folds and he opens up another one in the same spot.
And then, but there was also, what about like he had on his phone, how did you find that out? Like, on his phone there was pictures of naked women and texts and sex and stuff like that. What?
So one of the women from the spas told me he solicited pictures of her, and he was on the road all the time. But she said she didn't give him any photos, that for her was a line too far. But in 2017, which is a few years after the spas closed, but we found out about that first. In 2017, there's a woman in Canada whose husband was actually a pretty significant donor. He had purchased a bunch of radio time so that Ravi's, I forget what it was called now. That wasn't Ravi's, but it's one of his regular Christian radio spots. Could play on the radio. And a woman in 2017 wrote the board. I think this is right. She wrote the board and basically said, I have been having a text and phone relationship with Ravi Zacharias. I feel really terrible about it. You guys should know about it. This is a problem. And so those were the first sexting allegations that came out were in 2017. And she said that he had, you know, originally started talking to her about her problems, her history of sexual abuse. You know, they talked at a dinner, and then it progressed to email, and then it progressed to text, and then it progressed to sexually explicit stuff, including images and phone sex, actually. He replied in 2017 by suing her and claiming that it was all an extortion scheme, that she and her husband had cooked up this kind of crazy plot to get millions of dollars from them.
So that right there is way off the rails, in my opinion, as far as it goes from, again, I can understand how people get involved or power is used and that you get into a sexting thing. That I could kind of understand how that happens. But once the person tries to say something about that or come into the picture and make that known, the response from the board and the whole organization to sue that person seems insane. Like, that seems so, like, from his point of view, at least, like, the board was giving him the benefit of the doubt. I understand they shouldn't have, but he had to, at that point, do something much, much worse than send or ask somebody for a nude pic. That's bad to do, but to try to sue somebody to tarnish them and directly lie to your board and persuade them to do that and go along with that, that is outrageously wrong thing to do. Like, that is, you know, to cover yourself and what he must have seen is millions of souls on the line. I do unfortunately have to destroy this one woman. That's the only calculation that one could make at that time. And I'm sure he wanted to shield the board from that burden. He said, it says that he... And these things are often so weird, like they hide in plain sight. This is the theme that I noticed with not just Ravi, but the pastor's things are they seem to really hide in plain sight a lot. He was always talking about the importance of physical safeguards to protect my integrity. I'm getting this from your article. The importance of physical safeguards to protect my integrity, that he was the architect of those physical safeguards himself, and he knew how to elude them. But he was the one always talking about how you needed all that kind of stuff, but he therefore could get around all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and he talked in that sense. When the allegations in 2017 came out, one of his public defenses was, oh, well, I follow the Billy Graham rule. Mm-hmm. So it couldn't even possibly be true because I'm never alone with a woman who's not my wife or I'm not related to. It turns out that just wasn't true. And everybody knew that wasn't true. And I think there are lots of really good reasons to debate the wisdom of the Billy Graham rule. There are definitely like some very, very sharp criticisms of the Billy Graham rule. But the thing that stuck out to me was that he claimed this and everyone around him knew it was false. He met alone with women in his office. He left his office to go to massage therapy. No one thought there was someone else in the room with the massage therapist. Like, everyone knew. So it ended up I follow the Billy Graham rule, except in my private life or in my working life, or I don't know. I don't even know. Yeah. I should be clear though. I may have misspoke earlier. The board didn't sue, the accuser. Ravi hired lawyers for himself. So it was a sort of separate thing. It's, that's a technicality. But
what is the board's response to that? Because they did reach her directly.
The board, at the time, told everybody, we investigated, we looked into it, there's nothing there, you don't need to know anymore. He did exchange emails, they said, but, and he probably shouldn't have, they put himself in a bad situation, but nothing happened. But the more you look at it, the more it seems that that's just not true. Like, they basically said, did you do anything? And he said, no. And they said, all right, then, we're fine. I mean, I think there was a very high level of trust. There at some point was a binder of evidence. But from what I can tell from the 2017 scandal that the board looked at, but from what I can tell, the binder was selected evidence. No one just took his phones and looked at them. They allowed someone to say, here are the emails you should look at. And then it's not clear to me who looked at the evidence, but it wasn't the whole board. There was like specific people selected to look at the evidence. In this latest investigation, one of the things the lawyer, the independent investigator, found was that even just a brief look at his phones that he had at the time, and he had multiple phones and multiple email addresses, would have turned up a bunch of photos of massage therapists, actually around the world, both in the US and in Asia.
Yeah, there's Thailand and Malaysia are on the list there.
Yeah, and India, which he's from India originally, I don't know.
And then also all these allegations are pretty horrific, but there is a rape allegation as well.
which comes out in the investigative report. So I don't know that firsthand. I know that from the investigative report. It seems that at some point he started using ministry funds from a sort of special category for humanitarian aid and directing it to pay for stuff for massage therapists in Thailand and maybe India, and like starting to pay rent for people, paying for people to go to school. And one of the women says that Zachariah started paying for stuff with ministry funds and then demanding sex from her in exchange for, you know, paying for everything in her life. And she describes that as rape.
She used the word required. Sex was required for that.
Sex was required. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, how about this one of the board? So the board didn't hire the lawyer or whatever, but it says here that at first RZIM hired the firm of one of the lawyers who sued the people that they sued. I don't know if you're saying their name or not, but several people inside the ministry said Vice President Abdu Murray suggested enlisting a rough ex-cop to track down the accusers and uncover information the ministry could use to discredit them.
Yeah, so in 2017, they definitely treat the accusations as an attack. I think they talk about it clearly as a spiritual attack. They see it as people who are, you know, opposed to the gospel going after RZIM through Ravi Zacharias. So then then they sue. The suit gets settled. There's an NDA signed, a non-disclosure agreement. As far as I can tell, like, stuff has gone away. They've taken care of it. So then after the report in 2020 comes out with the spa allegations, the first response is to treat this again as an attack. We thought we were done with this, but no, look, there's still people that hate Jesus and hate the gospel. And it's weird that they're saying today. Yeah, absolutely. No, and I know that like they had prayer meetings where they prayed against satanic powers and the attacks that were coming. So yeah, so the first response to the allegations from the spa was not, man, we got to look into that. That sounds serious. Maybe these women are telling the truth. The first response was, we're being attacked. We need to defend ourselves. And at least one vice president said, well, these guys helped defend Zacharias 3 years ago. Let's get them again.
But a rough ex-cop private investigator to discredit them. That's what, I mean, first of all, we pray. That's the first thing. But after that, rough ex-cops. That's just wild.
I do find that in general, when people start talking about investigation and police, especially if they don't have a lot of contact with that world, they start getting very colorful and they sort of buy into the fantasy of the, I don't know, a Dirty Harry or a Sam Stone or some kind of gumshoe reporter investigator who's gonna. Mm-hmm. But I do think there was a real concern. I mean, I don't know that that happened. I don't know that they actually hired someone. I think that it speaks more to their state of mind than it does to an actual investigation. But that is, you know, that is the women who were abused, that is the thing they were worried about, right? Is this ministry going to use all its money to destroy us for telling the truth, to find stuff out about us and essentially slander us until people stop believing us?
And then there's the NDAs, which, I mean, NDAs, in my opinion, are not things, I don't think they're good, especially when they're involved with churches. I've seen them used in church settings in terrible, terrible ways from even the inside, preemptively, after the fact, stuff like that. And what is the deal on this one with the NDA? There was an NDA that even still they won't let the person out of?
So the woman who brought up the claims in 2017 is still bound by an NDA, which is held by the Zacharias estate, which is currently managed by Ravi Zacharias's widow, Margie, who has refused to lift it, even temporarily. So the independent investigator said, we think this stuff that happened in 2017 is relevant. We would like to interview everybody, but there's this non-disclosure agreement. Will both parties agree to essentially put it on a hold or just like lift it temporarily? And the woman who's been quite vocal that it was a mistake to sign it and that she wants to be freed from it, said, yeah, of course, I'll lift it. I'll talk to you. They can also talk to you.
What happens if you break an NDA like that, though? Do you just have to give back the money they gave you or something?
No, you can get sued. I mean, it depends on what the term says, but like you're violating the terms of a contract pretty clearly. And yeah.
So she received money to not tell her side of the story.
Yeah.
And so she's very worried that because they could sue her. Even if she's telling the truth, they could sue her and take everything potentially.
Potentially. Yeah.
Yeah. That's well, I guess that's how those NDAs work. That's why you shouldn't sign one. I don't know. I don't know what you can do about it.
I'm not a fan of NDA, and as a journalist, you know, for me it's like you tell the truth beginning to end. Like that's a pretty important commitment. But there is a logic to NDAs if you're like, I don't know, if you're not an advertising firm and you quit and you go work at another advertising firm. And you then say, well, I know all of their clients.
Sure, I understand that. Yeah.
So like there is, like that's why the legal tool was invented.
Yeah.
There is a reason for a very limited use of an NDA.
Proprietary knowledge, totally good with that.
But now it's being used for, and I was able to see at the one of the contractual language they gave to one of their employees who decided not to sign it as he was being forced out for, partly for talking to me. And there it said there was also specifically a non-disparagement clause. So it's like, it's not even pretending, hey, this is information that like we own or that you don't have the right to spread. It was literally saying, you can't say anything bad about us. Like that's the rule.
Well, that would distinguish that, in my opinion, should be a couple different ways. They should have one should just be called hush money deal, and the other should be called corporate information protection. But it's hush money. I mean, that's non-disparagement. And okay, I mean, but yeah. And I don't blame the person for signing. I really don't, because if you are in the situation where that's happened to you, and you can get into a negotiation, you're not. Those negotiations never go where you get what you want. It's always some really horrible, murky middle that the parties in a zero-sum exchange wind up at, and that's just how stuff can go.
And they felt at the time, and I think it's clear that this didn't work out, but they felt at the time that they weren't interested in publicity. They weren't trying to become like famous and tell their side of the story. And like what they wanted was accountability. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like the money that Zacharias was going to pay in the settlement was going to mean that somewhere the board was going to say, okay, like, why did you pay this money?
Right.
You didn't pay this money because you did nothing wrong. You paid this money. Let's talk about what you did wrong. And so it would like trigger accountability, and then they would avoid publicity and not have to make it a like giant, you know, public reputation battle which no one wanted to have with Ravi Zacharias.
I think one of the things that you guys did really well too is that adding this section in here where it starts up here where it says psychological studies show us sexual assault victims find that about 95% exhibit symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, and then you go on to list like one of the women stopped believing in God for a while. Another said she has not been to church since she and can't trust religious institutions. A third moved away from Atlanta, changed her name, changed careers, never mentioned what happened, all of that stuff. I think the after effects is really important here. The trauma that these ladies went through, this man that seemingly is Christian, good, beloved, changing lives for the better, doing all this stuff, is abusing these individuals. Like, they had to fight against the global aspect of this guy's personality and reach, that he's helping so many people, but to them, he was their abuser. And I think that's really important that you guys put that in there. I thought that was really great that you guys did that. But how hard was it for you I don't know. Were you a fan or a follower of Ravi Zacharias? And now to talk to these victims, what was it like for you personally?
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about that part you just mentioned, because some of the accusations, like sexting, I do think normal people can think, well, is that that big of a deal? Like, that's fine.
Right.
You know, maybe it is or isn't my own preference, but like, it doesn't bother me if someone else is sexting with their partner or with someone. But that's different when it's a famous person.
Right.
It's a different when it's a person who controls your financial situation. So mm-hmm. you are forced or you, right. you feel like you might be forced to do it. Mm-hmm. It's also different when it's a religious figure. You know, all of these women like originally thought, one of their first thought, the women that I talked to, one of their first thoughts was, I must be so bad that I caused this great man who's honored, who's praised, who is celebrated all over the world for his holiness, and who seems, you know, carries himself in this way too. I did something to make him be gross, to make right. him be perverted. And so they took the shame, you know, they took the guilt and the shame of his acts on themselves. And it wasn't until a lot of time and a lot of therapy and a lot of distance and growth too, to be able to say, wait a minute, I didn't do that. That was done to me. So I think that dynamic really, really has to be, paid attention to.
It seems to just be an accepted collateral damage to doing so much good in the world. That basically is what this all comes down to, is a complicit system that says there's a certain amount of necessary evil to getting the kingdom work that this gets done. Just like they say, well, cars are bad because they kill 40,000 people, but overall, we let cars happen. So to do the Lord's work, you know, these are just some of the bad things, but it doesn't erase what he did and all the stuff. And, you know, that's a tough, if you look at that argument soberly, it's tough when there's individuals involved. But,
oh, 100%.
But that seems to be the overall calculus. I'm not saying anybody said that explicitly. I'm sure they all hid it from their own minds. But in their own hearts, that's the deal that everybody kind of understands with a certain things that are like that. You just go, well, I'm sure it's not that great, but at least this. And that outweighs that. So there's always that, you know. So
Max
what will
Baker
happen to the
hitched.
Ministries, though?
Max Baker Hitch, who's one of the apologists who talked to me from within the ministry, he's in the UK. He said, I don't think anyone thought consciously Ravi's reputation is more important than victims of sexual abuse, but that's absolutely how people acted.
Yeah, but that's just how we all do that, though. I mean, we do it as groups and everything. It's just all you need is plausible deniability and the benefit of the doubt culture, right. And it's on.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, I followed him. I thought he would, you know, you would see the videos. I was talking earlier before you came on, Daniel, about like when I first started seeing more about Ravi, some friends told me about him, and then there were some books, and I was like, I'll check this out. And, you know, Christian apologist, and then it was kind of like the Ben Shapiro thing where Ravi destroys atheists or, you know, this and that. And you go, oh man, this guy really is, you know, and so you start giving him the benefit of the doubt because you think he's doing the Lord's work. What was it? That's what I was going to say. Were you like a fan of his or pro him? And then what was it like for you hearing all this stuff about him behind the scenes?
Yeah, he was never one of my guys. I knew who he was, of course. Yeah. I had listened to him a couple of times, but I wasn't ever a Ravi Zacharias devotee.
More of an Osteen guy.
I certainly couldn't have, mapped out the org chart for RZIM. That came later. That took a lot of reporting. I don't know. I mean, I really like philosophy. I studied philosophy as in undergrad. I did history later on in grad school, but I really like philosophy. But for me, philosophy and journalism are both really about opening up exploration. Like, it's good to have questions.
Yeah.
And even the best apologetics feels to me like it often has this element of like, and now we did it. It's done. And it's right. like, I don't know. I mean, if it's a good question, there are bad questions. But if it's a good question, I feel like it will generate more stuff and it's worth revisiting and it's worth talking about. So I don't know. I haven't done a lot of apologetics. I don't go too far into that. I'm more likely to go towards the philosophical side of things, read some Wittgenstein or something.
I mean, he was somebody that I really thought, I was like, wow, it's an interesting guy. And like you said, Matt, you were saying earlier, he's very persuasive.
Very winsome. Stories.
Interesting. Really, interesting looking guy. You know, just
really
right. All of those things. And so for me, when I started hearing about
the personal story, that was interesting coming from India.
Right. Yeah. And then we can go into this just real quickly, but the first time I started thinking, wait, what does this mean? Was that he was saying, you know, it was Dr. Zacharias, but then that was an honorary degree, but there was some labeling that they had to start changing. And I was like, why would he do that? That seems a little bit bizarre. Even that first little bit of information mm-hmm. that came out about him, that is when I started changing my mind going, wait a minute, that does seem a little bit strange that you got an honorary doctorate from somewhere. And I mean, he was using more and more credentials that weren't even true to get more position in Christianity or what there?
Yeah, I mean, sort of grabbing credibility and inflating credentials.
Right.
Yeah, which happened a lot in the old days. I mean, I don't know if you know, like Francis Schaeffer, everyone called him Dr. Schaeffer. It's an honorary doctorate. Like, it used to be a pretty normal thing.
It was normal.
And it is still in some cultures. I mean, it's a little bit like the Southern thing where you call someone a colonel. Like in a certain context, you know that this just means I honor you and not you earned this title or you earned this degree. Though I think the line between it's honorary and we say it just to honor him and I'm pretending to have accomplished something that I didn't, that's a pretty blurry line. And Zacharias was very clear that what was the effect of claiming these credentials. And it went beyond that actually with him. So he I can't remember now if it was Oxford or Cambridge, but there was something where like he sat in on a class and then claimed to have studied with a person.
Yeah, said he went to Cambridge or something. Yeah,
and then he had a position at one of, you know, the way the Oxford system works, you can have all these different schools. And he had like an affiliate position for like a summer program with one of the things associated. So it was like two or three degrees from Oxford. And then it would be, he taught at Oxford. And it's like, well, no, that's not, you know. Right. But he seemed very clear on the effect that those types of claims would have.
What was his name of one of the spas was called Touch of Eden, or maybe that was both of them, but he had a
Touch
business
of
partner
Eden was the first one, and Javon Wellness was the second.
Javon
one.
Wellness and his partner
Javon
was
apparently like the Hindi word for life.
But he had a business partner, Anurag Sharma. I might be saying his name wrong, but what was
Anurag?
Anurag, what did he say and what did he think about? I mean, is he also a Christian supporter? What was this business partner in your article? It just says business partner.
Yeah. So Sharma was also from India, lived in the US and sort of came into contact with Zacharias and loved him. And he's also someone who's listened to like lots and lots of self-help tapes. And when he found Zacharias, he just thought, this guy's the best. And he loved everything about him. He listened to him every day and ended up becoming friends with him. And I think that Indian connection helped. Like, they had him over for dinner and stuff. And Sharma told me, for instance, like, oh, I would text him all the time. I loved him so much. He was the smartest person around, and I just loved to be around him. He'd even like volunteer to drive him to the airport and stuff just to get time to be around him. So when Zacharias, from what I can tell, when Zacharias was like, I want to start a spa, he was someone who could help put up the money.
I see. But he,
so, and he told me, he's like, I don't know anything about spas, but here's $50,000. Like, I'll help. He said I was on cloud nine. I just wanted to be around him and I would do anything.
Wow.
Which there's two elements there that I think are really worth calling attention to. One is that Zacharias seems like he really curried those types of relationships. The people around him, from everything I can tell, were not people who could call him on stuff. We're not people who would say, hey, everybody else thinks you're the best ever, but like, I know the real you, or one of those types of, you know, that kind of friend who's like, other people think you're a genius, but I also know you're stupid.
Right, right.
He tended to curry those types of relationships.
Because that way he could just remain hidden.
Go ahead.
And maybe he was just always manipulative. He's manipulating men for that kind of support and protection. He's manipulating women for sex, but it's the same. In some ways, it's the same, treating people the same way in both cases.
And so, like, the whole organization, his family, wife, business partner, all of them are kind of claiming they didn't know much. They're saying they didn't know he was doing these things.
The business partner found out at some point and has apologized to as many people as he's been able to find, and has said things like, I don't know why I didn't stop it sooner. It's a little hard to tell exactly what he knew when, but he feels a lot of responsibility and feels like he should have known. But no, the ministry, everyone's saying they didn't know. Everyone's saying they had no reason to suspect, and
no reason at all to suspect.
Yeah. And external investigation, the independent investigation, says specifically, we did not find any evidence that anyone knew. Like, there's no, I don't have any evidence that anyone was in on it, that anyone else went along with it, or even like heard about it, decided not to look. I mean, I do think that there is a point where not knowing is its own kind of indictment. It's one thing to say, oh, I knew and I hit it. That's clearly a wrong and evil, but I never knew, but should you have known? There's right. A lot. It's sometimes it's your job to know.
There's a statistic there that would be interesting to have, and it's how many times do boards do investigations that come back with nothing to see here versus that's not – I mean, it'd probably be a staggering amount of – because when there's an investigation, you'd think a certain amount of that percentage would be stuff to find. But I bet it's skewed because that's in the pattern of many, many scandals that come out. They always do an investigation where they hire an investigator that is like independent or whatever, but it often will come back clean.
And you see there was that.
You go, well, we did our part, and you don't have to, you do not look after that. Like, once you've paid, done the thing, got it, what you see is an independent investigation, and it came back negative, you're good to go after that. You don't look anymore if you don't have to.
And there was that first impulse to investigate, meaning to look into the people who are attacking us.
Right.
And there also is pretty well documented in the stories an impulse of, we don't need to investigate because we know this man. We know him personally. We've been around him. You know, their initial denial to me was, he's 74. We've been around him all his life.
I think we would know.
We know the truth, you know, and there's a certain plausibility to that, except if people are hiding things.
Right.
Who do you think they're hiding them from?
Yeah.
You. And if your whole culture is about never questioning him and always supporting him and encouraging his dreams, then you're not going to know. But that's not an excuse. That's why you're guilty. You're guilty of not knowing.
I mean, it's wrong, but you can understand the organization wants to also save itself. It's jobs and careers and
the good it legitimately does.
Right. And it does do good. So the one leader who was very charismatic and started it all, now is your downfall. Maybe, you know, I can understand the idea of maybe we just can't believe it, or you know, if you got a whiff of something wrong with him, you do maybe look the other way. I'm not saying it's right, it's wrong, but I can understand somebody's mentality of, well, I better not ruffle any feathers because this is my job.
What will happen to the ministries?
And the CEO currently, after he passed away, is also his daughter. So that adds a certain layer of, like, a daughter having to investigate the sexual abuse of her father.
Is this organization, is it going to last? I mean, is RZIM?
Ravi Zacharias International Ministries.
Is it going to keep going? Or
we'll see. We'll see. It's international. There's like 16 international offices, might be 15. I don't remember the exact number. I suspect some of them are going to split. The UK board, which is probably the most significant, prestigious one with people who really do teach at Oxford. They've already announced, they've already voted, and they're out. They're going to separate and rename themselves and disown Ravi Zacharias and be something completely separate. I suspect other international boards will do the same. And then they've brought in a consulting firm to look at like management structure and office culture, and probably will do a rebranding as well. Pretty early on after that September report, they started talking about like the possibility of changing the name and making some kind of adjustments. But whether that means it'll be, you know, it was the world's largest apologetics ministry. Will it be just a small apologetics ministry, or will it cease to exist? I think it might be, you know, 10 people in a giant office in Atlanta. But that remains to be seen.
The end of your article is just kind of emotionally devastating. I want to read it. The end of your article says, two of the women who say he sexually harassed them in the spas agreed that Zacharias was a great man who served and sacrificed for the good of the gospel. They even told CT the good he did promoting the cause of Christ may outweigh the pain and trauma that he caused them, but they insist that that doesn't mean that the inappropriate sexual conduct did not occur. Even with someone as godly as Ravi, one said, you can still be battling with the devil. And that's how you ended the article there. And I was thinking, just these women are the good people. Like they actually are forgiving. He did bad things to them that will haunt them for their entire life, and they can actually say, they actually are saying he was battling with the devil, the things that they did to him. What was that like? These folks that you talked to, and they still are still believers. Still, they're still trying to honor God with even their trauma.
Yeah, one of them. I every time I talk to her, she asks me how Zacharias's family is doing. She's like, "Are his daughters okay?" And I'm just like, "That I'm so impressed that that's who you are. You know, that you're
Christ-like.
you're trying to think about, and you." Pain in the world hurts you. And they, you know, they were really insistent from the beginning that what they wanted was the truth to come out.
Yeah.
And what they wanted was other women not to feel alone.
Right.
You know, that part of abuse is secrecy. Part of abuse is darkness. And when they did come to terms with their own abuse, one of the things they kept thinking was, how many other people are out there? How many other people are living with this type of secret, you know, from Zacharias, but from others as well. And so they said, no, that's why I want to speak up, you know? And we talked about it at the beginning. I'm like, I can't promise you that RZIM is going to ever take this seriously. I can't promise you that Christianity writ large is going to believe you. I can't promise you that any sort of change is going to happen in the world, but like, we can tell the truth. And that to them was worth it.
Well Daniel, we appreciate them for that very much. The people.
Yeah. And I mean,
whistleblowers and people we've got to support.
Right. I mean, I even appreciate Christianity Today and you, Daniel, for really, I mean, I do think you are putting yourself out there. I think that a lot of people go, yeah, I mean, even the victims are saying, but all the good he did do good. That's what's so hard about this. I believe that Ravi Zacharias did a lot of good, but to not expose the things that weren't good would be sinful to me. That actually would be the bad, deceitful thing to not show the darker side of a human. And for you guys to do that, and for you, you know, to interview these folks and spend so much time on it, you know, we really appreciate it. And thank you for being so open and honest with us here.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It was a real honor to have these people trust me with their story. And I'm also humbled by how many other people have done this work, you know, before me on this story. There's so many people who have kind of broken up this really hard road and have made it possible for these women to tell their stories and for me to be a part of that. So I really appreciate everything everyone's done.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Now I'm worried that the next time we see you, it'll be another expose.
Well, maybe we can talk about something else. Maybe we can have a fun. Do you guys do fun bad Christian podcasting?
We try to have fun.
Yeah, we'll try to. Yeah, you got any lighthearted?
You should have a fun Christian every other episode. Or
you got
something.
Any like a raffle articles you're writing? You know, for to help. The
I mean, I do write. I do write other stuff.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Next time you come back, I want to just we'll just talk about the list of all the people that you have stories about that may never come to light. Yeah. we won't have to go into the details, just list off who they are.
That's not quite how that works, but it's a great idea. It'd be a very popular podcast.
If you need Daniel, a leak.
where can folks find you, though? Do Christianity Today, or is there any other place you want to send
folks? Christianity Today is great. I write on Christianity Today all the time. I'm also pretty active on Twitter at Daniel Silliman.
Daniel Silliman. All right. Awesome. Well, we really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yep. You too.
Great.
Well, Daniel, I mean, I really believe that the door has been open now. That's what I'm saying. With the internet, Christianity Today, you do have to take more seriously. It was considered to me just pro-Christianity, and it was telling you about what's going on in the world. And I know they probably wrote some more hard-hitting articles, but now in our circle, in the Christian circle, they are going to do some in-depth investigative reporting, and I think it's going to be really good. Like you're going to see Christianity Today potentially have the possibility to do more for Christianity than outside news networks like CNN or Fox News or something like that. I mean, those they might post an article about it, but within Christianity, we have to call ourselves out, and so I think that's good. Yeah, that's good momentum.
Yeah. Also, you got to book that banjo atheist guy. He sounds kick ass.
Yeah, I know. The banjo atheist. My God. I probably will get him. I mean,
I know. It sounds like a fun guy.
I know. He probably will be pretty fun. I mean, he's the atheist and he plays the banjo. I mean, you don't get much wilder than that.
To put those together means he's one of those quirky guys that I think we're going to like.
Well, how about this? If Toby Morrell in 1991, if you said, who's the good person, Ravi Zacharias or banjo atheist? Which one do I pick?
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, seriously. Like, I mean, isn't that crazy that the banjo atheist, he even broke the story and said, no one's going to believe this, but at least I'll just try.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what's the saddest part, if you really put all together all of the facts, including the business partner part.
Right.
That's very sad because that's the guy that Ravi went to, liked, obviously his friend, the board is his friends, these people in his life. And if none of them knew that, and he knew exactly what he would do, and he would speak to those women and those people, he knew everything, and nobody else really knew who the guy was. So right. He lived the whole time, okay, doing good. You know, give him all the give not him, but give credit to God for all the things that his ministry accomplished. But that man wasn't known by anybody while he was here.
Right.
That's right. What's crazy. And really crazy that he could articulate and speak. And I'll say it again. if she ever spoke out against him, she would be responsible for millions of souls lost when his reputation was damaged. Now, he died before all that happened.
Right.
And then it did happen. And so, according to Ravi, millions of souls have been lost.
Right.
It did happen. And his opinion is that millions of souls have been lost.
His manipulation, yeah. That's what
but I'm saying I think he believed that. That would have been required. So I'm saying that man's mental state is very sad to me because he must have believed that or been, you know what I mean? Like either way you want to slice it, he was all in on it or he's that cynical and manipulative, but nobody else knew. And he was worried about that, you know, for a reason. And it did happen, even though he's gone and he... You know, he left his daughter in the situation that he left his daughter in.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so some people say, well, he never got punished while he was alive or he got out or whatever. But I mean, there's no evidence to me that he lived any quality of a good mental life.
Well how about this, though? So it pops up on my Facebook feed every night. It's, what's his name? Dang it. Oh, God, I'm getting old.
Who pops up on Facebook?
What's a Growing Pains Christian? Kirk Cameron.
Kirk Cameron.
He's doing this 100 nights, and he does he lights up his fire pit, and he sits there and preaches to you, right? Mm-hmm. Every night he talks about, man, the evil and Satan, and he will lead you away, and he will lead you astray and all this stuff. Why won't all those people come out right now and tell you that Ravi Zacharias is burning in a lake of fire in hell? Because he is, if everything that I've been taught, you know, that I was taught, not everything I've been taught, but what I was taught when I was growing up, somebody like Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell right now for eternity on fire for the crimes and the horrific things he did to people on this earth without repentance.
Because the woe to you, you know.
Right. I mean, just Kirk Cameron 2 nights ago was saying that Satan will lead you astray. And if you don't get right with God, you know what will happen. I mean, Kirk Cameron, hero for Christ and all that stuff.
So from his view, Ravi's in hell.
So why is he telling you about you being worried about going to hell? Why wouldn't he say some of the these big famous people like, yeah, they're burning in hell right now. Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell. Right. Yeah. Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell right now forever.
Yeah, it happened to Ravi. Right? So let me use this as an illustration to you.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, what's the use of the illustration of hell without actually saying, let me give you an example. It's just an illustration. It's just something you say. Or here's an example. And so that's what I mean. Let's make some bad Christian T-shirts that say Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell.
Well, I mean,
else it's not true, which I'm okay with. I'm really okay with saying let's move on from this hell condemnation burning thing. But if not, if people aren't going to move, if like family members and people you know and people on Facebook aren't moving away from hell, well, they need to be wearing a Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell T-shirt
as a warning to save more souls,
or else they don't care about souls.
Functional for their soul saving.
Ravi Zacharias did so much for the kingdom. Unfortunately, he didn't get to go in the promised land, just like Moses, right? He's in hell burning right now. As soon as he died, he is burning. His flesh is burning. He's screaming. He's in agony because of the sin that he did here. And and God says he deserves it. So who am I to say? God says he deserves it, not me. I don't think Ravi Zacharias should burn forever, maybe. Maybe I'm too nice of a guy.
Or perhaps God says you burn. Could use a different interpretation of hell and understand that his mental state that he must have left in or spending eternity knowing what he's left his daughter with. That's a metaphor, you know. Maybe that could be conceived of as hellish, you know. That's an alternative.
But I'm the bad guy if I say if I make a T-shirt, Ravi Zacharias is burning in hell.
The bad guy.
I'm the bad guy. Let's start with him at least. Maybe first. He's burning in hell. That's what how many people? How many Christians out there say people go to hell for doing horrible sin? No. He did horrible sin. Did not repent.
Yeah.
Unrepentant. I mean, they found
they would say,
on his
though,
phone
maybe
now.
He repented to somebody, or he repented to God, or whatever. Though,
why
did
he still have all those pictures on his phone then, Matt? They found him after he was dead.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's between him and God. But
and he didn't die suddenly either.
But if he ain't in hell, you probably don't need to worry about it. If Ravi Zacharias isn't in hell, then anyone
then
listening
your kids
right now
don't need to worry about it, probably either, right?
Yeah. Don't tell them
don't
might
tell your kids
about it. Don't tell them. Don't give them a threat of hell. Lay
don't
off
tell
that
your
shit.
Kids unrepentant sin will cast them into hell.
Right. No. Or tell them, yeah, look at Rabbi Zacharias. He's burning right now. He is burning. You know, you and I, we're going to go get a coffee at Starbucks. Rabbi Zacharias at this moment is burning on fire with worms in his body eating his flesh.
And you
in
think
darkness
that isn't
with fire.
True, but possibly true, though. Like, you actually, you're saying that, and there's
well,
because
I was taught it.
That's what I'm saying. You're not sure that that's not the case.
I can't tell you that he's not burning with flesh, his flesh burning and with worms in his flesh. But anyway, so this is a good moment to join the BC Club, I'd say. Because I'm telling you, I don't know what's right or wrong anymore, but I will just say I think Rabbi Zacharias is wrong, and this is a great episode. I really appreciate Daniel coming on here and being so open and honest. You want more episodes like this? You want more stuff going on? You want more stuff behind the scenes? The BC Club is awesome. They get two extra episodes a month, a week, not a month. 8 extra episodes a month, I guess. We do Mondays and Friday episodes, and it's just going great. And the team, I call them, I shouldn't say team, but I feel like our BC is a team that are all together trying to do the same thing, just figure out this thing we call faith and deconstruction and reconstruction or whatever you want to call it. So join the BC Club. Where can they go, Matt, to join the BC Club?
TheBCClub.com. Yep. We'll try and tape another episode for y'all this week, public, too, while we're at it, maybe Friday, like we've been doing, hanging out.
Well, I guess that's it.
This is the pod you've always wanted to hear. We are two guys that sometimes drink beer. And we say things that your mom told you to fear. It's the bad, 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 bad Christian.